For those who care to join, let's go ahead and start the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. All right, I'm not seeing any virtual hands. All right, it looks like Kathy.
Hi, Kathy, alcoholic. I'm on day 17.
Wonderful. Welcome, Kathy.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Awesome. And I think we have Roy as well.
Hi, this is Chris. I'm back on day one.
Well, Chris, glad you're here.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I think we've got one more. All right, Robert, I think I asked to unmute.
I'm Rob, I'm an alcoholic. I'm on day 9. This is my first virtual meeting.
Welcome, Robert. Glad you're here.
Welcome.
All right, anyone else? Awesome, so glad you guys are here. All right, we're gonna do the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Adam and Valerie. And let's see, our first reading tonight is going to be on page 84. We'll read, and then each of our panelists will have an opportunity to share for a few minutes, and then we'll continue on with our reading. So our first reading this evening is going to come up on the screen. There we go. All right. Our first reading from page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And Valerie, I'll pass it off to you.
Thanks, Jessica. My name's Valerie and I am an alcoholic. Glad to be here tonight. Glad I could step in. So my experience with step 10, the main thing that sticks out to me and that stuck out to me when I was first going through that was the idea that I was going to be continuing to take inventory, that it wasn't a one and done experience. And you know, they give us the statement, warning, whatever you want to call it, you know, to continue to watch out for these things within, you know, the resentment, the fear, the anger. And they give us, you know, really step-by-step specific directions on what to do when those things crop up. And sometimes I'm willing to follow those directions. Sometimes, you know, I just like being angry. So, and want to enjoy that for a hot minute. But inevitably, you know, because I'm on this path and because I've chosen this as my way of life, I'm willing to submit myself to those directions, and sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly. I guess it depends for me on how justified I feel in my resentment. But inevitably, I always end up talking to somebody, and if I'm talking to somebody sane, somebody that is, you know, on the path and really trying to do this thing, the question will always come up about, well, Val, where were you wrong in all of this? And, or have you thought about looking at it this way? Or, you know, have you prayed or whatever? Have you asked God to remove that fear? You know, it's always brought back to me because ultimately I'm the problem. Ultimately, you know, I learned that when I did inventory, you know, that I manufacture this stuff. And, you know, those are really simple, clear directions for me to move out of the way, and something I can do if I'm ready and willing to do it, to take care of it. You know, my mind is busy all the time. And if I'm angry or afraid, I'll be thinking a million thoughts about that. And, you know, I become completely turned inward. And these directions force me to, or give me, I shouldn't say force me, they give me the opportunity to turn outward and let it go. And that's powerful stuff, so I can be at peace because I'm of better use. I'm more effective in the world of the spirit. I can hear God better, however you define God. I can hear my creator better if I am not super busy up here with thoughts. Because if I'm having those kinds of feelings, fear, anger, whatever, my head is very, very busy. So it really gives me the opportunity to slow that down and a specific way to do it. And with that, I'll pass it on over to Adam.
Oh, thanks. My name's Adam. I'm an alcoholic, and thank you for the opportunity. And it's cool sharing the evening with Val, because I remember Valerie from when I was early in my sobriety, living in Richmond, Virginia. And actually, I remember talking to her one time on the phone. I was having some issues with my home group, and a woman in my home group said, "My sponsor's Valerie. You should call her." And she probably doesn't remember this, but I actually picked the phone up and called her one day on my way home from like work, and just talked to her and bitched and complained about a home group. And she helped me out, and it was cool. But all right, getting to the topic. I remember that I had a sponsor when I lived in Richmond, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't live there anymore. His name is Gary B. And he was this like small, really quiet guy. But one of the things he taught me when we went through the steps was that, you know, when it talks about in step three, that God will provide what we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well, you know, that God's, you know, work for me was to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, you know, and so to tie that into the 10th step, you know, again, it's wonderful when I can work the 10th step on a regular basis, and I can, you know, be rid of these small little resentments and small fears and things like that. But the reality is that the reason that I do these steps is so that I can be more effective in helping that still suffering alcoholic, you know, and it's as simple as that. When I'm trapped up in my head, I'm of no use to anybody. You know, I just had something happen today that I was so happy that I was going to get on the meeting tonight, because I was like, oh, I'm going to have an hour where I don't have to think about that thing. You know, I messed up and I did something wrong, and my ego is telling me that I didn't do anything wrong and that this other person was at fault for not, anyways, I want to believe it's not my fault, you know? And the reality is that it is my fault, you know? And like it says in that paragraph that we just read, you know, one of the best things we can do is to turn our attention to somebody else, you know? And I have a guy that I'm working with right now that I've been sponsoring for a couple of years, and he's going through some stuff in his life. And we were walking the other night, and we go walking in Colonial Williamsburg, and we were walking the other night, and you know, and he was talking about this hard stuff that he was going through, and you know, but the thing that he talked about was how he was still working with newcomers, and how he was still meeting these newcomers, and how he was still doing stuff with other guys in the program. You know, and I just looked at him, and I was like, dude, I'm really proud of you, man. I was like, that's the secret to this whole thing, is that we, you know, we continue to do these selfless acts, even when our life is, you know, quote unquote shitty, you know, like, you know, and he was like, oh, thanks, man. That means a lot to me. But it's true. You know, I mean, that is where the relief comes in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not when I sit at home and I think about the things that I did, or the people that I hurt, or the lies that I told. It's when I do this 10 step and I apologize to those people, and then I move on. I don't sit there and think about what could I have done differently? How can I change the past? It's what can I do now going forward? And for me, you know, the answer is always get to a meeting, call somebody in the program. Obviously I don't get to meet with as many people as I used to anymore, but you know, meet with a sponsee, help somebody else out. And it goes against everything that I want to do, which is I want to have these internal dialogues where I play the situation out 50 different ways. And it turns out that every single time I play it out, I come out on top, you know, and that just doesn't work for me. You know, I'm not good when left alone in my own head, you know, I love the 10th step. I love it and I hate it. It's a constant reminder for me of how messed up I still am and how human I am, which is good and bad, you know, because there was a part of me when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that thought once I went through the steps of AA that everything was going to be great, you know, and I wouldn't make those mistakes anymore, and I wouldn't hurt people, and I wouldn't lie to people. And the reality is that I still do that, you know. One of my memories that popped into my head immediately when I thought about the 10th step was, you know, having to apologize to my aunt about just some dumb thing that I lied about right to her face that I didn't need to lie about. And I told her a lie, and then I went home, and, you know, if I'd been sober for a little while and I didn't feel good, you know, I got that feeling inside me that was like, that's not you, man. You don't get to do that anymore and live peacefully. And you know, the next day I did just go to her and say, she would have never known, but I just had to say, you know, I told you a lie the other day and that was wrong. And you know, and she said, well, you know, I mean, she was trying to figure it out, and I just wanted to say to her, like, you'll never understand why I'm going to do this stuff, like, but this is just something that I do, you know. And it was very humbling. And anyways, I think that's all I'll share on that. Thank you.
Great, thank you both. We are going to continue reading on page 84. It says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Valerie?
Hey, yeah, I love this piece of the book. There's so many principles in there, you know, cease fighting anything or anyone, loving well, you read it earlier, but love and tolerance of others is our code. I mean, those are huge statements for someone like me who, you know, respected no one and tolerated no one. You know, just was like that tornado through people's lives. And to cease fighting for me was, has been a process. And to cease fighting anything or anyone, I personally love going to war. And, you know, especially if I think that I'm right, and that you are wrong. You know, I will, you know, what's even funny is, you know, when you're sober a little bit and you're in a relationship and you're in an argument, and then you realize as you're arguing that you really are wrong, but you don't want to admit that you're wrong. So you keep still arguing your wrong point. I mean, that's me, you know, I've done that many times, unfortunately, but, you know, which is flying in the face of ceasing fighting anything or anyone. The memory that's coming to me regarding that principle, when I think I first really got some real conscious experience with it, was my now dead ex-husband. I went to him and said, hey, I think Nick should go, our son, I think Nick should go to school over here and be in this county. And, you know, and I had my reasons why, and why it was going to be better for Nick and better for him. And he didn't agree. And he started, you know, arguing with me, and it turned into a big fight on the phone. And I called my sponsor at the time, Don, and was telling him about the situation. And this was the line that he said to me. He goes, Val, we cease fighting anything or anyone. You know, that's when we let go. We put this in God's hands, and you have stated your point. You've stated what you want. Now you got to let it go and just see what happens. And it all worked out beautifully, but I had to let go. I had to surrender and not keep fighting or make the situation worse. You know, and then they talk about sanity has returned. You know, meaning when I think of alcohol, you know, I have sane thoughts about it. You know, what's the same thought around alcohol? For me, it's if I think about drinking or alcohol or using and I don't go do it, I'm like, I'm gonna call somebody. I'm gonna pray. I'm gonna turn outward. In the past, if I thought about using or drinking, I went and did it. There's no, you know, peaceful little moment of reflection for me. You know what I'm saying? It's I'm gone. So to have those moments of recoiling as from a hot flame and picking up the phone and talking to somebody or praying or that happening naturally as a course is a huge promise for someone like me reacting sanely and normally. And it did happen automatically. It does happen automatically with me today. Not that I think about it very often. It doesn't happen very often, but it has. And I mean, I've been sober 27 years. It's happened through the course of my sobriety several times. And I think that's a very true what it says, that it's been given us without any thought or effort on our part, meaning I'm not thinking through not drinking. You know what I'm saying? I'm not white knuckling it. I'm not, you know, playing the tape through, so to speak. You know, an action is automatically coming up within me, and I'm taking it. And that is a gift, and it is God-given. That's not something I've ever been able to do. I've wanted to be able to do that when I was trying to control and enjoy my drink, but I was never able to do it. Even when I was in AA, sober, wanted to be here, all that stuff, had a sponsor, was trying to do the due to the best of my ability, even then I couldn't stay sober. I could not drink. And, you know, when they talk about the grace that we've gotten through the steps and we're at this peace, I mean, that is a huge promise for someone like me to be given that gift of sobriety and that, the resistance. I don't know what the right word is. but to be placed in the position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, they put that in there a couple times with our creator. They put it in here and they put it in, back in the third step, that you're safe and protected with the God of your understanding. And if you, your conception of God is not full of protection, love, and understanding, you might want to reconsider what you're turning your will and your life over to. But it's saying the problem has been removed. So that's how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So what does that mean? To me, when I first read that, I was like, I got to be perfect here. If I'm not perfect, I'm not going to get this thing. I mean, it scared the shit out of me, quite frankly. And how it was explained to me is, I am not perfect. I'll never be perfect. Adam was talking about that. You know, I'm still a human being. But on a daily basis, I've got to be willing to do the best that I can with the answer that I've been given. Some days I'm like a spiritual giant, and other days I'm a puppy peeing in the corner. You know what I mean? It just really depends. But I've always tried to do my best on the day, because I know. And I got to say too, I mean, I also drank the AA Kool-Aid. I mean, I love AA. This is my answer. This is what I do. So I'm surrendered to it, but I do the best that I can on any given day. That's what that means to me. Thanks.
Yeah. When Val started speaking, I immediately thought, when my wife and I got married, we've been married about 8 years. And when we got married, one of the suggestions she made was like, let's just go start seeing a marriage counselor. It'll be good for us. And, you know, and my wife's in the program and she believes in therapy and thinks it's great. And that's her profession as well. And, but one of the things we discovered was that I loved to, I mean, fight is the simple word for what it was, but every decision that had to be made, I wanted to have an opinion about, and I thought my opinion mattered, and I thought it needed to be heard. And most of the time, and when I say most, probably, let's be honest, like 99% of the time, I wanted to be right too, you know? And, you know, the therapist was like, you know, he just said, like, he said, you, not every decision needs to be a hill that you're going to die on. You know, he said, is everything that you guys, you know, discuss that important to you? And I realized like, no, like very little of it mattered, you know, like, but it was that thing of, I guess it was the ego and you know, I remember early on people in AA saying, you know, do you want to be right? Or do you want to be happy? And sometimes I'd say, I want to be happy. And sometimes I'd be like, I don't care if I'm happy. I want to be right, man. And, you know, and you know, I still do that probably more than I should. I still get spun up on things that really have no impact in my life more than I should. But it's a lot less than it used to be. And, man, those days when I can just live in my little 3x3 square on the earth, those days are so peaceful. And, you know, and I got a lot going on around me. I mean, I've got little kids and, you know, I'm a teacher and I'm getting ready to go back into this weird virtual mess that we're all going to start up in the next week. And there's a lot of uncertainty with that. And, you know, and we're thinking about moving and all, I mean, there's just a lot going on, but you know, when I really focus on the things that I need to just focus on, God, man, life is so much easier. And I don't have to engage in those battles, man. And you know, and it kind of segues into talking about alcohol. But you know, I don't remember the moment when I stopped fighting alcohol or fighting against the desire to drink or fighting against the thoughts that came. But I know when Val said, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, like I know that when I came into AA the last time, I felt like it was the last time I was going to come into AA, you know, and I just did everything that y'all told me to do. And I went everywhere with people in AA and I did everything that people in AA did. And I listened to what people in AA said to me. And, when I don't know if it happened when I got to the 10th step or the 10 step promises. I'm not sure exactly when, you know, but I just know that I focused on doing what people told me to do, which was like, go to meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, you know, form relationships with other sober men in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And when I, you know, after, I don't know, after a year or so, when I started thinking about it, I was like, man, I don't think about drinking anymore. And like, and again, it, like it said in there, you know, it just came, it just happened. And I think if I'd been focused solely on that, I would have probably had it happen. And I might've been in of the mindset to be like, all right, well, I'm good now. See you guys later. But I had enough wise alcoholics in my ear that said, Adam, alcohol is not your problem, you know? And if all you're worried about is stopping drinking, you're going to really sell yourself short, you know, I don't even think I remember reading the 10 step promises the first time I went through the big book with somebody. You know, I think the first time I really started focusing on the 10 step promises was when I had a home group that adopted the 10 step promises as their promises at the end of the meeting. And I was like, oh wow, this is all about alcohol. This is pretty cool. But you know, I'm not guaranteed abstinence from alcohol for the rest of my life. You know, because it makes a very clear distinction at the end of that reading. You know, it says if I keep in fit spiritual condition. You know, and you know, if I'm being honest, like right now in my life, you know, I'm not in the fittest of spiritual condition. I mean, I believe I'm doing what I should be doing and what I can do, but you know, like I said, man, my life is it's crazy. It's all a gift. You know, it's all stuff that I got because I was sober. You know, and so. But man, you know, like, you know, there's days when I'm like, man, I don't even think I prayed today. Or there's days when I'm like, man, I didn't give Alcoholics Anonymous one thought today. I didn't think about another person in AA today, you know, and I don't consider the conversations that I have with my wife, AA conversations, you know, just because she's in the program and I'm in the program. Typically, we're not sitting down discussing step 10 at the end of the night or anything like that, you know, so I don't count those. But, you know, I mean, if I rest on my laurels, which maybe we'll read something about that tonight. If I rest on my laurels, you know, for too long, you know, I firmly believe that I'll think that I'm not an alcoholic, or I'll think that I don't need various parts of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that scares me, you know, and then guess what? That promise is gone, man. You know, all of a sudden that thought of drinking will return, you know, and me versus the thought of drinking on a not spiritual or not sober mind is a pretty dangerous thing, you know? And I always talk to my sponsees, and, you know, when I describe my program, I talk to them like it's a barrel with a small hole in the bottom, you know? And like, all I'm doing is filling that barrel as much as I can, whenever I can, but there's always a little bit dribbling out the bottom, you know? And so hopefully I'm doing as much as I can, whenever I can, and I'm keeping that barrel as full as I possibly can, so that when those lean times come, whether it's the quarantine or it's, you know, this crazy time right now with my kids getting ready to go back to school and everything else, I can draw on those reserves, you know, I can draw on those deposits that I made in the bank. And, you know, and then I can get back to like a fairly normal sober life again, you know, and start adding back to that barrel again. So, anyways, yeah, that was good. Thanks.
All right, thank you. We will continue reading. We're on page 85. It says, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Valerie?
Thanks, Jessica. It's very true. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. And I have done it. I'm sure I'll do it again, and rest on my laurels. And, you know, the warning that they give, you're headed for trouble if you do, because alcohol is a subtle foe. And the trouble for me is the unmanageability. It's the irritable, restless discontent. You know, that's the stuff that kind of starts sneaking in, a little bit of smattering of depression and maybe a little rage attack or something like that. I mean, those are the things that are telltale signs about where I'm at spiritually and if I'm resting on the program of action. You know, daily reprieve, continuing on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So, you know, AA for me has to be a way of life. Surrender has to be my normal approach to life. Prayer, meditation, to some kind of power greater than me, however I define that, has got to be a part of my life. Regular inventory, where I'm looking at myself and where I'm wrong and asking for God's help, has got to be a regular part of my life. Making amends when I've harmed somebody, not only cleaning up the stuff from the past, which, you know, for my first real inventory took years to clean all that up. But as I'm today, as I'm going through my day, if I make mistakes, acknowledging them and being willing to clean those up. Sometimes I don't, you know, want to acknowledge that I've made a mistake. It's just too embarrassing, or I just don't feel like making the effort. And that always comes back to bite me in my relationships. So I've got to be willing to be honest. I've got to be willing to make amends when I've caused harm. I've got to be willing to look at myself, listen to other people that are around me. I'm very fortunate that I have people in my life that will be honest with me, not in a mean or cruel way, but they'll be honest with me sometimes when it's uncomfortable. When it's uncomfortable for them, and it's certainly uncomfortable for me. And I've become open to that because I realize I can't always see everything that's going on with me at any given time. And I remember Ken Devaney saying one time, and I love it, and I think it's true. He's like, you know, sometimes what I think is going on and what's going on at all, but I think I know what's going on, but I don't, you know. And that's been my experience too many times to not know the wisdom and the truth of that when stuff happens, when life comes to visit. So the maintenance on my spiritual condition, carrying the vision of God's will into all my activities, thoughts which must go with us constantly. I mean, what an order. I can't go through with it. And I mean, I'm like, I said to Don, I'm like, I'm just not this good. I just can't be this holy person that I feel like they're asking me to be here by thinking about God constantly and how can I do God's will. I'm like, I'm never going to have fun ever again, ever, you know? And anyway, he goes, Val, just practice it. Just practice it and see what happens. Try not to get into how the universe is going to manifest that in your life. Just be willing to follow the simple direction. So ultimately, in my heart, because I am awake, once you know, clear away all the other, you know, pomp and circumstance, the reality is in my heart, I really do want to be of service to God's kids. Very important to me. And I know that that's my purpose. I'm not at war with that. So if I can look at it that way, how can I best serve you, God? Your will, not mine, be done. And being willing, when I first started doing that, I had to be willing to believe that God's will was gonna be okay. And that I could let go. I mean, to me, step 10 is all about letting go, surrendering, admitting when I'm wrong, understanding that as I go forward, you know, I'm taking all the exercises that I've done up to this point, and I'm going to continue to practice them as this way of life, you know, of surrender, of belief, of continuing to grow in understanding and effectiveness, like they talked about at the beginning of that, and carry the message. So, thy will, not mine, be done. How can I best serve you? What do you want me to do today? God's the director, not me. God's the principal, not me. I mean, if I surrender to the nature of that relationship in step three, then that's the dealio. And, you know, sometimes I am totally in alignment with that, and sometimes I'm not. But again, like it talked about earlier, this is about practice, practice, practice. It will continue for a lifetime. So, you know, I just sometimes like to get into absolutes, and that's not what this is saying, but it's easy for someone like me to take it that way, but that's not their intention, I don't think. And that's all I got. Back over to you, Adam.
Thank you, Val. Yeah, I had two thoughts based on the reading. The first was, you know, that description of alcohol being a subtle foe, and you know, that, I mean, I know when the two times I relapsed, alcohol was not a subtle foe, but I'll also say this, it wouldn't have taken much for me to relapse when I did, because I was not working any kind of program. I was not connected in any way in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, alcohol walked right down the middle of the street and was like, hey, you want to go drink? And I was like, that's exactly what I want to do. And that's what I did. And, you know, that's kind of all it took there. But, you know, I know for me, when I've heard people share in meetings that have had time in the program that seem like, why would that person go drink? Like, I thought they were so solid. They seemed like they had everything going on, you know, like, it was never a direct hit, you know, it was never, I just thought about drinking one day and I decided to go drink, you know, it was like you know, my alcoholism is always coming at me from new angles and new ways, you know, and it's like a light whisper in my ear, all the time, you know. You don't have to do that. You can lie to that sponsee. They'll never know. Tell them you're sick. You just want to stay home and watch the hockey game tonight. Like, they'll never have a clue, you know? And you know, that's the stuff I have to be careful of, because enough of those little things happen in a row. And then before I know it, I'm not even around anymore. And then all of a sudden it's a very direct message and I don't have any defense against it, you know? And I find myself in a really dangerous place. You know, I had a good friend that I sponsored for a while and I was friends with, and, you know, and he would often come in destroyed and work really, really, really hard and get really connected, get a home group, get a sponsor, start working steps, you know, all the things that you want a sponsee to do when they're new. You're like, oh, this sponsee is so awesome. You know, they're doing everything, man. And then, you know, he would rest on his laurels, you know, and inevitably I wouldn't hear from him for a month, 2 months, 3 months, you know, then I'd get a phone call. He'd be in some strange city, wouldn't know how he got there. And, you know, we'd start over, you know, and, you know, inevitably, or eventually, I should say, didn't have to be inevitable, but maybe it was inevitable. You know, he ended up dying, you know, and there was a part of me that was very sad. I was very sad about it. There wasn't a part of me. I was very sad about it, but there was a part of me that sort of felt like it was going to happen, you know, like it wasn't an if thing. It was a when thing for him, you know, and that's always been somewhere, you know, filed away in those files that I look at all the time, you know, that just, I can't stop doing this thing, because it'll get easier and easier to stop doing the things the more I stop doing them, if that makes any sense. You know, it's it's hard to miss that first home group meeting. It's not as hard to miss the second one in a row. It gets a little easier by the third one. You know, before I know it, I haven't been to a meeting in 6 months. You know, luckily I've never had that experience in my sobriety, you know, but, I love the line after, and I'm going to say it, I'm going to read it so I don't say it wrong. You know, one of the most quoted lines in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, is the daily reprieve line, you know, that you hear people say. And I love the line after that, you know, which is every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities, you know, because that is my ideal. You know, that is what I'm trying to live up to every single day. You know, every day I'm trying to get up, and whether I consciously get down on my knees and say, God, how can I do your will today? Please show me, whatever it is, or whether I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, you know, that's my ideal. You know, how can I carry God's vision into all my activities every day? And it's not very often that I get that right. You know what I mean? But man, when those days happen, God, they're pretty powerful days, you know, and they, you know, with all the people in my life running around all the time, it's, I don't want to say it's rare, but you know, maybe like once a month, maybe once every couple months, I get one of those, like, I think I did God's will today, like in all my activities, you know, like, and it happens. And I'm like, oh man, holy crap. You know, like, what an amazing feeling. And I go to bed at night and I just feel like 50 pounds lighter. And I'm like, oh man, this is awesome. You know? And so like, that's my ideal, you know, carry God's will into all my activities. Do I do it often? No. Do I try to do it? You know, I think I do, you know, I hope I do. I hope I'm putting forth the effort for it. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Great. Thank you both. We have one more reading for the evening. And it says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. Valerie?
Thanks, Jessica. And thanks, Adam. That was awesome. I don't know, the stuff that stands out to me is all knowledge, all power. You know, and then the AA joke, you know, your sponsor say, well, how much does that leave for you? You know, nothing. But, you know, do I believe that my creator has all knowledge? Do I believe that my higher power has all knowledge and power? Have I carefully, you know, followed the directions up to this point? I mean, those were all questions that I was asked. You know, have I begun to feel the flow of the God of my understanding spirit within me? And only I can answer that question. I mean, I could certainly parrot or make something up, but those are questions I have to honestly ask myself. And have I become God conscious? I used to be like, well, what does that mean, God conscious? And for me, it is just the willingness and awareness to, like what it says, how can I best serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine. When I am consciously taking those actions is when I am God conscious. The fact that those occur to me is a gift, is a spiritual gift, you know, because that's not how I lived before. But being aware of God's presence, being aware of intuitive thought, being able to finally trust intuitive thought, that vital sixth sense that they're talking about, you know, and they don't stop there. They say, we're going to do some more work in step 11 around helping you get in touch with that, because ultimately that's our answer, is our relationship with the God of our understanding. I don't have too much else to say about that. That what they write in that paragraph has been my experience, and I think everybody individually has to ask themselves those questions, you know, am I getting this? Is this my experience right now? Do I feel the presence of my creator? However someone defines that, that's just how I do. So, yeah, that's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Val. I don't know exactly how I guess I've always interpreted this in more in the way they sort of talk about it in the 11th step, you know, like this idea that, you know, like God's power is starting to flow back into me. Like I'm thinking of it in terms of like, I'm getting my learner's permit all over again or something, like, you know, like I'm going to be allowed to, have supervised control in certain places of my life, you know, or something with God's help. You know, and it goes into way more depth in the 11th step, but like, you know, this idea that, you know, it referenced it in the promises, you know, it says by this time sanity will have returned, you know, and like, so like, you know, I still can be crazy and I can still make, really irrational choices in my life, but there are times when people are starting to trust me and I'm being put in positions where I have to make decisions, and I'm allowed to make those decisions now, or like I can trust my instincts to some extent, you know, and you know, if I really opened myself up to my higher power, you know, in this idea that, you know, God really is in charge and that I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of this higher power on a daily basis and trying to form this relationship with God, you know, this sixth sense, which it's funny they would call it that. It's almost like it's something that everybody else has in their life, you know, this ability to make decisions without them always being about themselves. But for us, it has to be a sixth sense, you know what I mean? It has to be some sort of special power that, you know, like other people just seem to have. But yeah, like, I don't know, man, it is truly a miracle when I make a decision and I don't think about myself first, like even to this day, you know, I mean, I've been sober almost 20 years, you know, and like, it's like, I still, you know, break my arm patting myself on the back sometimes. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I thought about my kids before I thought about myself today, you know, or I thought about my wife, or I thought about my coworkers, you know, that's pretty amazing. You know? And it's like, God, man, shouldn't I just be doing that, you know, by now? But the truth is like, you know, there's still that default switch in me that always wants to go to self first. And I feel like every day I got to flip that switch, you know, it doesn't stay permanently turned to others, you know, it always resets overnight. And when I wake up, I'm always in that self mode if I'm not careful. And, you know, I have to really be aware of that. You know, and when I do enlist the power of my higher power, you know, it sure is a lot easier. But yeah, sixth sense, man, that's interesting. My sixth sense, my superpower is that I can sometimes care about other people and, you know, let my higher power help me do that. So, thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you both. We will allow people to unmute later on to thank our speakers, but thank you both. That was fantastic. We are going to do a little bit to close up the meeting. So we do have a seventh tradition link hopefully coming to you in the chat pod now. Let's see, the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose. which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Thank you all for being a part of that this evening. Are there any AA-related announcements? You can wave at the camera or use the virtual hand-raising tool. All right, I don't see any virtual hands. Going once, going twice. All right, we'll continue on. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hand. Some of us will hang around the Zoom room after the meeting if you'd like to connect. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here in the room. But please also feel free to send questions to info@simpleactions.net. Again, thanks to everyone who has participated. After the Lord's Prayer, we will provide the opportunity to unmute. And before we jump to the Lord's Prayer, I've asked BJ to read a vision for you. So let's unmute BJ. And I will share that for you on the screen.
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Adam and Valerie. That was great. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, CJ. All right, so we will close with the Lord's Prayer. All right, and folks, you should be able to unmute yourself if you'd like to join. So we'll take a moment for the sick and suffering alcoholic, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.